This week, having helped launch Love Lamb Week, we're helping bring it to an end. Plus, why the CLA is fighting to stop the possible closure of Louth's livestock market.
This is The Farming Programme with Sean Dunderdale.
Good morning. You might remember a couple of months ago, we discussed a study being carried out by Wilkin Chapman, asking you what you see as your priorities for the future of agriculture. Indeed, if you're at one of the summer shows they were at, you might even have taken part in the study itself. Well, the results are now in, and a report has been put together into just what you had to say. Catherine Harris can tell us more about the findings.
Yes, so we were asking, polling the farmer, what their key priorities were for the next 5 years. And we asked them if they were concerned or they had priorities about Brexit, succession planning, diversification, or environmental and disease control. And we carried out that poll at three shows, at Cereals, the Lincolnshire Show and Driffield Show, and the results are now in. So just to talk you through the results, Sean.
Mm, please. So
41% identified agri-policy as a key concern. So that was the number one concern. Then we've got succession planning at 26%, diversification at 20%, and environmental and disease control at 13%. Now, I think they're really interesting results, and I'm not surprised that Brexit and agri-policy has come up on top there. This is a massive change for the industry. You know, I was just doing a little bit of research last night in preparation for talking to you, Sean, and, you know, CAP, that's the Common Agricultural Policy, was first introduced in 1962. So there'll be one or two farmers that can remember farming before CAP, but not very many. That's quite a number of years being under the subsidy system. And, you know, the subsidy system has undergone quite considerable changes over that time. We had, in the early years, it was linked to production. And you might remember in the 80s concerns about the grain mountains, and that led to some reforms. Set-aside was brought in to try and alleviate that. And then we had the single payment scheme brought in around 2003. And gosh, if you speak to any farmer about the transition into the single payment scheme, it was really difficult. And I know people have still got issues with the Rural Payments Agency that administer that scheme, still unresolved. But then we went into the basic payment scheme. And so through those schemes, what we've seen, Sean, is a reduction in the amount of the EU budget which is allocated to common agricultural policy. So, you know, to know that we're going to go out of the EU, that's going to happen, that's going to be a massive concern because, as I said, a lot of farmers will not have experienced farming outside of the subsidy scheme. So I think that it presents real opportunities. And what is important is farmers engage with their MP. I said this to you at the show, Sean, and it's still the key message.
Indeed.
We've got to get engagement. You know, I was reading the leaked reports in The Guardian on Wednesday this week about immigration. And yeah, there's some, you know, there's some concerns there for the vegetable growing salad producers, and there's a, you know, obviously a large amount of those producers in Lincolnshire, and they've got some genuine concerns about where they're going to get their seasonal labour from. But you know, that was a leaked report, and you can put on that what value you want. But I think it's the start of the process of saying, let's engage, you know, let's take stock of where we are, and that's why it's important that producers, farmers, they make their views known.
So really it is, isn't it? It's a case, I mean, whether it's over Brexit, which, you know, it's still uncertainty there, but a chance to engage with those decision makers. If you roll into that, you know, succession, again, planning is going to be key as well over the next few years with those kind of concerns and issues, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, the Brexit agri-policy actually is very heavily linked to succession planning, diversification, environmental and disease control. The four, I think, are strongly linked because, you know, if the farmer hasn't got a viable business because they haven't got the support, the agri-policy support, then, you know, there is no succession. So farmers are thinking about diversifying, and they're thinking about what they're going to do in the future. Well, I hope they're thinking about that, Sean, because it can be a thorny issue because, you know, if I have farmers come to speak to me at Wilkin Chapman about their legal issues, and we can give input, obviously, on the legal side. We can engage with tax experts. But actually, a big factor in this is psychological and making the change, getting the farm to the next generation.
Thinking a bit more long-term, really, isn't it?
It is. It is about the long-term. And you know what? That's really difficult at the moment because of the uncertainty. I think that is why it's important to engage. And, you know, the National Farmers Union are really getting to grips with that. You know, Wilkin Chapman are the legal panel members for Lincolnshire, and they're really engaging with that, and we're engaging with them as well to bring these issues to the fore, because they are going to affect people's livelihoods, and that actually will affect the amount of people that they can employ as well, and who they employ.
Catherine Harris of Wilkin Chapman, and you can find out more about those findings, and they do make fascinating reading on the Wilkin Chapman website. On to the latest grain prices then, equally fascinating reading, I'm sure. Tom Miller can update us from Open Field this week.
Good morning.
Now, we've recorded this on Friday because you're doing something a bit special today.
Yes, Great North Run up in Newcastle.
Oh, good luck.
Thank you. I'll need it
as well. What time are you hoping for?
Sub 150, hopefully.
Okay.
All being well.
You did it last year, yeah?
Yes,
yeah.
I did, yeah.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
What's happening, going back to the day job, what's happening with the grain prices?
Well, drifting, really. Weather has been not helping for people who've still got bits and bobs to finish off harvest-wise, bit of spring barley, beans left out there, still quite a few beans left to do. So we could just do with another week of dry weather, really, just to get things tidied up. But looking at global scene, really, wheat and coarse grain stocks remain heavy following another good Northern Hemisphere harvest, resulted in US and EU wheat futures market making contract lows this season, for the season, really, as the market attempts to find a bottom. One issue is the availability of high-quality milling wheat following crop issues in the US, Canada, Australia, Argentina and the EU, where weather has meant that much has been downgraded to medium quality or feed quality, whilst also reducing production estimates. Conversely, though, Russia has had a stellar wheat harvest with estimates in excess of 80 million tonnes and rising, although logistics and weather will dictate what they can actually export. This has put downward pressure on values, and talk of government intervention programme in Russia, this is support prices, has been muted, but increased Russian carry-out stocks are going to be inevitable, really. UK has benefited from sterling weakness and relatively tight supply and demand for a second consecutive season. Wheat harvest is drawing to a close. Variable quality and yields reported, which is supporting values in the near term. Future price direction, again, largely really be governed by politics. You know, we've got Brexit, we've got Trump, we've got North Korea, and their impact on the currency markets, as well as Southern Hemisphere prospects going forward and biofuel mandates. A quick look at oilseed markets. They've really been quiet over the week. Little news in the market. However, on Thursday, the EU announced that they would comply with an earlier WTO ruling that the import taxes on Argentine biodiesel imports, which have been in place for the last 4 years, are actually illegal. This caused a €5 fall in the French Matif rapeseed market. But by allowing more imported biodiesel into the market, EU producers will find increased competition and lower prices, so hence the correction in the futures prices on Thursday. Stronger sterling, back above 1.09, has not helped domestic prices, although values are still considered to be above where they were at harvest. In wider markets, US soybean crops have been relatively unaffected by the weather in the news, with most crops in the north and east not being affected. Weather across the growing region has been favourable and could lend support to higher than expected USDA yield. This will only be confirmed when combines get into the bulk of the crop. Australia's dry weather and adversely affected the crop low in the forecast over there. Quick look at prices. Feed wheat is worth 134 to 136x, November 136 to 138, and November 18, 141x farm. Group 1 milling premium circa £15 over feed. Feed barley 118 to 120x for September, and 121 to 122 for November. Malting barley markets remain in a state of flux domestically, with harvest still ongoing across the south and the north of England. Results continue to disappoint on a whole, with both quality and yields below expectations. Domestic consumers are still deciding how they're going to approach this year's crop and how they're going to use it and what specs they'll take it in on. Springs are £30 to £35 premium over feed, depending on location for the deferred periods. Oilseed rape, September is 318 to 320x, with a £3 carry through to November and a pound a month carry thereafter. Beans, the bean quality is not great, with samples having high brucid levels, which is not restricted to certain areas or regions. It seems to be fairly widespread. Very few vessels of human consumption for export have been sold, and in hindsight isn't a bad thing given the quality that the UK has. Feed values have drifted on the back of the quality, and beans looking for a home certainly in the spot period. Feed beans are worth 150 to 152x for September, plus a pound a month carry. Good quality springs are worth 175 to 180, depending on location.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tom Miller, Open Field. A consultation over the future of Louth livestock market ended this week. You might remember the council has three options on the table: keep it, move it, or axe it. Over 3,000 people have responded to the consultation, and the CLA this week revealed its hand, saying it wants to keep the market where it is. Claire Wright of the CLA has told Matt Soans why they want to save it.
The market is absolutely vital for livestock farmers in Lincolnshire. It allows them to not only trade sheep and cattle, but also to network with their peers. We know from our members that agriculture can be a very lonely profession, and the market is a hugely valued facility.
Yeah, you know, that social aspect is something that's often overlooked. So it really is a vital as a place to socialise.
Absolutely, yes. And it is just about so much more than bringing the sheep and the cattle each week. You know, it's knowing what the values of the livestock are doing, and as you say, it's getting to see their colleagues, their professional colleagues, and their friends as well.
It gives sort of a window into, you know, what the market's doing and, you know, what things are happening in agriculture, you know, through networking.
Definitely, yeah. And if the livestock market at Louth were to go and to close, the next nearest facilities are going to be either Newark, Hull or Thirsk. And that's a hugely increased journey for livestock farmers within the county. And I think there'll be several of them that would think twice about going, say, every week. They might cut their visits down to once a month or less frequently. And that could have a serious knock-on effect, not only on their business knowledge, but also on their social well-being.
So East Lindsey District Council they basically put forward three options for the future of the market, and they argue that it's very expensive to maintain and that most farmers go to Newark anyway. What would you say to that?
I think there is a huge throughput still going through Louth livestock market. It's a very viable facility, and we firmly support the option that is to continue operating the existing site in Louth, subject to some essential repairs to the main building. We also understand that some of the land on the existing site could actually be sold, and that would actually fund the works and also give some funding to that could be spent elsewhere in the district. If Louth closed, it would actually be the last livestock market in the county of Lincolnshire, which would be a huge loss. And while some traders on the edge of the county do take their stock to Newark, that's a significant distance to travel the stock. You know, from some of the northern parts of the county, and obviously that has impacts on the costs of actually transporting that stock to the sale, as well as the time factor.
Yeah, does it have animal welfare implications as well if you're having to take stock a long distance, you know, even over the Humber Bridge?
Potentially, because if you get traffic hold-ups, then they're going to be stood on that lorry much longer than if they just went up the road to their local livestock mart.
That's Claire Wright of the CLA chatting there with Matt Soanes. On to agronomy then, and Sean Sparling is out in the field once again for us, literally.
Yes, morning, Sean. Absolutely shameful that a livestock farming county like Lincolnshire, one of the biggest counties in the UK, may end up with no livestock market. Absolutely disgraceful. You know, it's an incredibly important resource. It's for the welfare of the animals as much as anything that they don't have to travel long distances to get to a livestock market, but also the welfare of farmers. Why aren't you considering the welfare of farmers? It's an incredibly lonely, stressful business, farming, and to remove the livestock market from Louth would be, well, it would be shameful to do so. I can't think of a better word for it, really. It's anathema to me to think it could happen. Anyway, I need to stop. Let's start with oilseed rape. The wet weather this week has been the talking point. Tuesday afternoon, by 1 o'clock on Tuesday, we'd had over 25 millimetres of rain upon the top of the wolds around Ranby. Things are very, very wet. That's done several things to what's happening out there. The first thing it's done is complicate spraying of stubbles and cabbage stem flea beetle, because you can't go out in the wind and the rain doing that. It's brought on the slugs. They've started to mobilise now. They've started to hatch and move. A lot of little tiny 1 and 2 millimetre slugs out there that will need monitoring and addressing if need be. The cabbage stem flea beetle damage has eased off a little bit because it was so wet and windy, but that started up again. And the other thing, of course, is it's moved the oilseed rape. It is growing now. It's got moisture, it's got warmth, the late drillings, they're growing reasonably well now. So let's start with cabbage stem flea beetle. If Lambda-cyhalothrin is not killing cabbage stem flea beetle, and you're seeing that in the field, there's no point putting alpha cypermethrin or cypermethrin or deltamethrin or zetamethrin on these crops, because a pyrethroid is a pyrethroid is a pyrethroid. If they're resistant to one, they're resistant to all of them. That is a very important point. Also, don't go within 7 days, because the legalities of applying pyrethroids mean you can't go within 7 days of applications. You have to leave 7 day intervals, and for goodness sake, don't keep spraying the same damage. If you're walking into an emerging field of rape and the cotyledons are getting hit by flea beetle, you need to apply a pyrethroid to deal with that problem. Then what you do is you monitor it every day. You go out twice a day, three times a day, look at the oilseed rape and see if that damage, as the plants grow, is happening on the newer emerging leaves. If it isn't, then the chances are you're starting to get in front of the cabbage stem flea beetle. If it is, you need to get out there and apply again. But remember your restrictions on the amounts you can use. Remember the rates you can use. Remember the doses you can use. Just remember all of these things. Keep legal. The more you apply pyrethroids on fields that don't need it, the more you're controlling and removing the predators, the beneficials, which are doing an awful lot of good for us, not least the ground beetles, which are eating the slugs. And while we're talking about slugs, metaldehyde, remember your restriction, 210 grams of active or 7 kilos of a 3% product between the 1st of August and the end of December. If you use a 1.5% product, that's a smaller pellet, you get more bait points, and bait points are the key. So you could go with 14 kilos in total in that period if you use a 1.5% product, because you're then not exceeding the 210 grams. Remember ferrous phosphate, use that anyway around the headlands of your fields, particularly if you're near a watercourse, because you have this 10 metre restriction with metaldehyde next to any watercourse. There has to be a buffer zone of 10 metres. So use ferrous phosphate around the outsides. It's more expensive. We will start to address that, hopefully, with industry power. But remember that metaldehyde is hydrophilic. It attaches to water, so it goes into the water, gets in the watercourse, it goes into the rivers, and it ends up in reservoirs. It's of no risk whatsoever to human health, but it costs a lot of money to get out. They can find it in there, and if we start getting peaks of metaldehyde more than the allowable levels, we're going to lose metaldehyde. So for goodness sake, please think about it before you go blanket applying slug pellets on fields. Put your traps out, monitor them. If you need to go, go, but don't just do it for the sake of doing it. It costs you money, and it may well cost us metaldehyde if we get it wrong. So that's the biggest issues in oilseed rape at the moment. I haven't seen any foamer to mean anything out there, certainly haven't seen any light leaf spot. So hopefully the oilseed rape will start to flourish and get up to four leaves, but so that it starts to grow away from some of this damage. But it is slow at the moment. Sugar beet, second fungicides going on, just a bit of beet rust about. Remember, you've a 3-week harvest interval with many of the fungicides you may put on, so if you're early lifting, it probably isn't worth the money. You won't get that back by spraying a fungicide on some of these early lifts. But if you're late lifting, I don't know when it happened that we're doing our job wrong if we don't put 2 or 3 fungicides on in a season. Monitor the crop. If you've already put one on, keep an eye on it. You know, if the rust starts to come back in, put another fungicide on, but keep that 3-week harvest interval. And the other thing is potatoes. The blight hasn't gone away just because you've topped or you've desiccated the final haulm of the crop, because the ear spores will still be on the ridge surfaces. So for goodness sake, don't spoil the ship for a hape of the tar. Get out there with a product which is capable of killing those spores, just to make sure you don't get a late blight infection, because it can still infect at this stage of the year. So hopefully the weather will be kinder to us next week. But if it isn't, there's not an awful lot we can do about it. We just have to do our best. That's all you can ever do. They always say there are only 2 decisions you can make. You can make the best decision, which is the right one, or you can make the wrong decision, which is the next best. So there's only ever best and next best. So hopefully you'll get one of those.
Sean Sparling of Sparling Agronomy Services back next week. It's the end of Love Lamb Week today. It started back actually on September the 1st. Yes, as I said last week, a little bit longer than a normal week. Well, there's a lot of lamb to love. We chatted last week with Gail Spake. She's currently chairwoman of the Rural Breeds Survival Trust, but he's also secretary of the South Down Society. So we thought it worth discussing that to mark the end of Love Lamb Week. Here she is chatting once again with Ellie Codling.
We've got over 60 native breeds of sheep in the UK, and we then have others that are sort of crossbreeds. But the South Downs is an interesting breed. Obviously, indigenous homeland is the South Downs. Way back in the 70s, we were very much a rare breed with only 32 breeders. The fortunes turned around. Once the Rare Breed Survival Trust was set up in 1973, we became listed as a rare breed, which really sort of highlighted the challenges the breed faced. I'm pleased to say that in 2007 the breed was reclassified as traditional native, and we now have about 7,000 breeding females across the national UK breed. It is an interesting breed because it is not the largest of the Downland breeds, but it is a meat sheep, and it is really a breed that is used for producing a terminal sire. And by that I mean that you can use a South Down ram really onto any kind of ordinary ewe and produce a good butcher's lamb that will finish relatively quickly and give you a good meaty carcass with, as the old shepherds say, a leg at each corner. The wool is of use as well. All of agricultural industry, as you know, is fighting for its corner, and we are finding that the South Down is really now being favoured as the breed to use as the ram on commercial ewe lambs, because they lamb quite easily. They don't make great demands on the dam, so the ewe lamb can continue to grow whilst the lamb is growing in the womb. It can actually milk that lamb, but actually do then very well to go on and breed other seasons. So commercially, it's used very much for putting onto ewe lambs. But as you've seen, it is an attractive breed, it's aesthetically pleasing, and we have, I have 359 members currently in the South End Sheep Society, and many of them, the majority of my members probably have 10 or less breeding ewes in their flock, and that's because they are very efficient lawnmowers, they graze very well, they are attractive to the eye, they can then actually breed a few lambs, keep a few replacements, but they also have lambs in the freezer. And I have to say, I know I'm biased, but the South Down tastes, I think, best of all the breeds of sheep when you've got it on the plate.
So a good all-rounder then, really?
I think so. Yeah. Each breed has its followers, and I'm a fan of some of our rarer breeds and our primitive breeds, but if a smallholder is looking for an animal that is docile, easily tamed, friendly, attractive, because it does make a difference if you've only got a couple of acres and you want something pretty in an orchard. It sounds silly, but it's something I know from the new members that come. They only buy a few, but you've still got something. You know, you're never going to make a fortune with a few sheep, but if you can sell just a few freezer lambs to customers, then perhaps it might pay for your hay or your feed or your vet bills through the winter.
Gail Spake there, talking South Down and marking the end of Love Lamb Week. We've touched on the weather already. What's heading our way this week, though?
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Well, today is overcast, possibility of some rain by evening. 14 the high today, maybe 15 in places. Overnight tonight, a few showers, mostly dry, lows of 11. The wind throughout today and overnight from the southwest, 20, gusting at 40 miles an hour for a time. Tomorrow starts cloudy, sunshine come the afternoon, 17 the high, the wind from the west, 20, still gusting at 30 miles an hour for a time. And then it's clear skies and dry overnight Monday into Tuesday, a little cooler, temperatures down to 9 Celsius, the wind from the southwest at 10, gusting at 20 miles an hour. Sunshine through Tuesday, temperatures at 18, the wind from the south-southwest at 15 miles an hour. And then some further heavy rain likely to start Wednesday morning, certainly overnight Tuesday into Wednesday. Temperatures around 11 Celsius first thing Wednesday morning, and the wind from the west-southwest, 15, gusting at 30 miles an hour. Further sunshine through Wednesday, temperatures at 16. It will be a breezy day, though, from the west-southwest, 20 to 35 miles an hour. And then for the latter end of the week, remaining unsettled, some further rain possible, but also some sunny spells mixed in there. Temperatures 15 or 16 Celsius, with overnight lows just below 10 degrees. The wind more from the northwest come the end of the week. And that's the forecast. Next week, we'll get an update from Nick Morris of British Sugar. Plus, we'll put a call in to Colin Jackson at PJP to find out the very latest in the world of potatoes. That's next week at the same time. Don't forget the podcast online if you've missed any of this week's programme or want to hear some previous editions of the programme as well. It's all on the website and the mobile app. But we'll do it all again, same time next week. Till then, have a good week's farming.